Blog Talk Radio.
Playback.
Welcome to Who's Through That Personal Black Art Radio Show. I'm your host, DJ Gatsby. You got a wild start to the show. Once again, it's DJ Gatsby, Who's Who Left American Little Black Short Radio. We got Vanessa, I hear you laughing already. What's going on, man?
Hey, Jeff, what's up? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm trying to get my show together here. So excited about having you on, my sister. Once again, everybody, it's DJ Gatsby, Who's Who Left American Little. My guest today is the one and only Vanessa Green in the building. There you go. That's my audience. That's a round of applause. Vanessa, thank you so much for taking time out to call in, my sister.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
All right, for everybody who doesn't know who Vanessa Green is, she's from New York, actually Rockland County, to be specific, Spring Valley. She's involved in so many things, helping people all over the New York region. She's an advocate of gay rights. She works with VSC Pride, the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Initiative. She's also one of the founders of the Black Lives Matter chapter for Rockland and Orange County in New York. And she does a host of other things. Very talented young lady. We're just so happy to have her on the show. And once again, just put your hands together for Vanessa Green, everybody. So Vanessa, how you doing? How's everything going this week? How you feel today, babe?
I'm feeling good. Yeah, I'm good. Every day you're above the ground is a good day, I always say. So, yeah. Feeling good.
Absolutely. Stay busy, stay working. You got plenty of time to sleep later on. As you guys may not know, me and Vanessa go way back, grew up in the same hometown.
Yeah.
Didn't go to the same high school, but we came from the same neighborhood and remained friends after all these years. She's been very supportive of me and the whole WB Media Group, you know, the television show we had down in D.C., this particular Blog Talk Radio show, as well as WBMG Publishing, the publishing company I had. And, Vanessa, thank you so much for supporting me and all that I do, my sister, really.
You know, no problem. Yeah, we got to support each other. Support is important, yeah.
And as you know, I've been a fan of your work. I've been following you, social media. And, you know, I'm really proud that, you know, someone from my generation stepped up, and, even from my neighborhood, stepped up and made their voice be heard in speaking for people who don't have a voice in this particular society. I want you to tell me a little bit about what you do now. I know you work at VCS. But we're going to start there. What is it that you do at VCS?
Oh, okay.
Tell us what VCS
is. VCS, we used to stand for Volunteer Counseling Agency, but it doesn't anymore because it does so much more stuff. Now it actually has a mental health clinic, so it actually takes. We actually are taking Medicaid and Medicare now. But what it is it's known for its unique volunteer counseling pool. So we have like over 100 and something counselors, and you can come in and get affordable counseling with qualified counselors. And it's a sliding scale that can go almost down to like $5 where you can't get that anywhere in the country, you know. So it's really a unique program. So what I do, though, is the reason it's not called Volunteer Counselor Service anymore is that we have a piece of the agency that is, we consider it the Community Change Project, which Pride used to fall under. Pride now left VCS this summer because we are actually on Rockland County is getting a Pride Center. So the two women that were spearheading Pride at VCS are now gone, and Rockland County will now have its own Pride Center. So that's why I was doing that work while they were there. So my job now is I do. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't want to cut you off. I just want to mention the VCS Pride. I was going to ask you to say something about that, but I see you were getting to that.
Yeah. Because VCS, once the mental health clinic opened up, you realize that Pride, that kind of stuff don't need to be there. So a lot of people came forward to help get this Pride Center started. Rosie O'Donnell actually is very big in helping this Pride Center get started in Rockland County. Rosie O'Donnell actually matched a person who gave, I don't want to give people names, but people who gave a lot of money. So somebody said, I'll give $75,000, and Rosie O'Donnell matched that. So Rockland County will have a Pride Center opening real soon in Rockland, and it's going to be in Nyack. It's going to be a knock.
Okay. Now, for those people who don't understand VCS Pride,
So when people say that, the Pride Center will be for the lesbian, gay, bi, transsexual, trans community, and the non-gender conforming folks. So anybody who wants to get services, et cetera, will be able to go there for services, et cetera. So that's when the Pride Center opens. And it's going to be, Jeff, at the where the Elks Lodge was in Nyack.
Oh, that building.
That building was going to be luxury apartments, and luckily they were able to get that building for the Pride Center.
Wow. Well, congratulations, man, on getting that center together. I know you have a large, a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, and usually it's hard to find, like you said, counseling and help and any other information to support that group. So congratulations on that, man, and all the work that you've done to get that up and running. Now, before you worked with VCS, I got your bio off LinkedIn, by the way, very extensive. Before you worked with them, you were working with the Rape Crisis Program in Orange County. Tell us a little bit about rape crisis program in Orange County.
Yeah, I ran the Rape Crisis. I was a director up here for like 5 years, and I enjoyed that piece, but real clear, it's hard work. It's hard work to see the brutality that women, you come across some men, but men don't report as much as women because it really is predominantly a woman, what happens to women. But it took a toll on me because every time you have to present at a hospital, or I had to debrief my volunteers and my staff. It took a toll in it, but I love the work and what I had done, and what I really I'm an advocate at heart, is that what we were doing was that we were increasing the numbers in Orange County, because like anything, Jeff, if you're not really looking out for those people who are marginalized, like the Black and Latin community, you're missing that people, and you're working with just white folks. When I took over the position, I had increased the numbers for Black and Latinx folks by almost 3 times, and I had staff that was cognizant of that, and we had increased that. We had an office in Newburgh, et cetera, so we were reaching out to our communities that are not white. And so I really enjoyed it, but it took a toll on my soul. I was like, okay, 5 years of this is a little bit too much, and so let me try something else. So, I'm an advocate at heart for women, but it just, so anybody who's doing this work, I know they who do rape crisis work, they are the advocates. I give them much props because this work is soul killing. It'll kill your soul if you do it a long time.
Yeah, I understand. Once again, everybody, it's Who's Who, Not Breaking Licks, DJ Gasser. We hit Vanessa Green of New York. She's talking about some of the work that she's done helping rape victims, as well as working with BCS Private, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. Now, you continue on. Now, you said that was in Orange County, but you were part of an organization. I think it's People's Institute for Survival and Beyond, Undoing Racism Workshop that you did in Rockland County. Congrats on that. I wish I would have been able to take that workshop, because I haven't had a chance to hear you speak. I did hear you speak briefly, I think, at a Black History Month event in Nyack, but when I saw that, I was like, well, I'm really proud of the sister. I would have loved to have heard her. But you also helped with the People's Institute throughout an Orange County community. Now, what was that about? Was that still about racism?
Yeah, what we do is VCS every year brings the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond to do that 2.5-day training, and they are phenomenal. So what we do is we actually what I did is I helped initiate to bring it in Orange County, too. So because, you know, Orange County needed as bad as Rockland, but Rockland is committed to doing it every year. Rockland has been doing it for over 20 years. I mean, so Rockland does, like, in October, okay. We'll be doing it again for 2.5 days. And these people from Louisiana, New Orleans, you know, New Orleans, not Louisiana, New Orleans. And
okay.
Which is Louisiana. And they are phenomenal doing this 2.5-day training. We encourage anybody to type, like, I encourage black folks to take it because the history
Absolutely.
Of how this country was created and white supremacy was created is what we need to know. So we've done it in Orange County about 4 times. And normally when we do it in Orange County, usually I'm at the table to help, you know, let's organize and get these people up here because it's a very expensive training. It costs about $12,000 to $15,000 to bring them. And they're worth every penny and then some. And then some.
Okay. Well, definitely the next time you do that in Rockland, let me know. I'll help you promote and get the word out. Again, a lot of us don't know too much about racism. We got a new generation of brothers and sisters that are coming up very angry and want to do something to facilitate
yeah.
change. But a lot of them just don't know, you know, how this institutional racism
yeah.
is how it started, how it continues, and how black people who aren't familiar with institutional racism play an unwilling part in it because
yeah.
they just don't know what to look for.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, you've done a lot of work there, my sister. When I saw that bio, I was like, wow, she's been doing this for a long time. There's
yeah.
so many layers she's done. It looks like she's systematically worked her way through this process by reaching out to poor and disenfranchised and people who don't have a voice, man. And it really speaks volumes to your dedication, you know,
yeah.
to black people.
Yep.
Now, the other thing I saw here, and I want to stick to your bio because it has so many talking points on it. That and I called you a civil rights activist, but basically, you know, you're an activist, but you advocate for much more than civil rights, as we can see by the earlier part of the interview. What has been your passion? What drove you to this? Because it seems something that you know that chose you. And you're very passionate about it, but what led you in this direction, Natalie, you know, when you in your career?
You know, I think what really almost clicked me was when I remember when Trayvon got shot, and I was like, oh my God, you know, I was upset about that, and I kind of was like, that man should go to jail, and when he didn't go to prison, I was like, and I was upset. You know,
yes.
It hurt my heart a little bit. But I remember, and I never forget this, and I remember telling my boss when Mike Brown got shot, I said, I got to go to Ferguson. And she was like, what do you mean you got to go? I said, I need to go to Ferguson. And it was amazing that at that point, Monica Dennis, who I had met, because she used to be, and I'm not sure if she's still a core trainer for People's Institute for Survival and Beyond. She used to be a core trainer for them. Monica Dennis in New York City was actually planning a bus trip to Ferguson after Mike Brown was shot. And I was like, can a sister get down on this? And she was like, yeah. So I actually, when I went down there to see a community being held siege by a militarized police department, I was that's really what almost, because I've always been an activist because my grandmother was an activist, if you remember my grandmother, Pearlie Mae Height. So she kind of was an activist.
Mm-hmm.
She started the first manpower agency program in Spring Valley. So I kind of knew it was in my blood. But after going to Canfield and seeing how that community was under siege, it took me to another level to say, black people don't need to live like this. Black communities don't need to be under siege. We are human beings. We are citizens of this country. It's always like No. I'm done. And it took me to another level when I went to Ferguson, actually, because I had always been an activist anyway, but that opened my eyes to people ain't right, and we and you and this government, and we need to really dismantle how this system has been set up to really systematically dehumanize people of color, black and brown folks of color. And I was like, no. So that's what really kicked me into another gear going to Ferguson and meeting people who are wonderful, who look like me, who were upset, who were hurt. And you'd be real clear, letting that brother lay in the road for 4 hours. And Jeff, we don't let dogs lay in the road for 4 hours in this country.
Yeah, no, that event was appalling to me as well. And the lead up to, you know, trial and the whole investigation, you know, when, you know, they had the military style vehicles, military style gear, you know, they basically came in and occupied that city.
That was a prelude to what
they can and will do. And it just it took me back because I started remembering, okay, we've seen this scene played out before.
With the move bombing
and over the Philly.
Yes.
We've seen these military-style vehicles come out before. We heard that the military-style vehicles were coming to departments in the United States, and they were going to start policing the citizens of America the same way they do countries that they occupy militarily. And it was particularly in black communities. And, you know, when they came out in Ferguson, I think everybody understood that, you know, they're going to go to any extreme necessary to quell these voices and to keep these people down and never give them an opportunity to rise up with violence against against the police. Congratulations. Kudos to you for going out there. I'm glad you mentioned that because, did you want to say something else?
No, that was good. That's what got me. That took me to. I always tell people it took me to another level. And that like opened. It opens another eye in my head. Like, oh, okay, I got you.
Now you see what they're doing. It's not all about a cop killing somebody and then the cop, you know, not being indicted and the grand jury doesn't choose to indict. That's one. But when they're saying you can't come out and protest, you can't come out and speak, you can't come out and gather. Against the police brutality, that we will quell this uprising. That was, I think, what sparked a lot of people into civil disobedience. And with that being said, I want to talk about the Black Lives Movement. Because that's the time that I became aware of the Black Lives Movement. I became aware of, these groups and organizations that are saying, listen, Let's look at all of these instances where black people have been killed. Trayvon Martin, Mike Brown, the list just started going on and on, and it started accumulating numbers, 1,200, 1,500 over the last. It just, you know, everybody said, wait a minute, we've always known blacks have been killed by police, but the numbers are staggering, and now we have eyewitness accounts, we have videotape. And it's still the same conclusion that they're coming to is that there's no culpability for the police.
No, not at all.
It says here you were one of the co-founders of the Black Lives Matter chapters in Rockland and Orange County. How did that come about, and who worked with you in forming this organization's chapter there in New York?
Well, you'll be interviewing Weldon soon. But what happened is that we were waiting for Tamir Rice, the whole thing. They're taking Tamir Rice, the cop who shot Tamir, to before the grand jury, and all of a sudden he comes back, no bill. And Weldon, for some reason, I had gone to he had a forum at his church, and there was some cops there from Spring Valley, and I had lost my mind in the audience. And he had came over and said, just, you know, don't worry, somebody's going to say something, Vanessa. You know, he didn't know my name. They said, just come, because I was screaming at the cop. That's what I do when cops talk. Just shut up, cop, because you don't know what you're talking about. Because police take a position of defense every time a black person says their truth.
Of course.
They always want to explain and defend their position. I just need cops sometimes to shut up and listen. And they don't do that. So I was screaming at a cop because Spring Valley has the people don't know about Spring Valley. Spring Valley has militarized police stuff. He actually admitted that.
Oh, yes, they do. I'm aware of it.
Yes. Yes. So I started yelling and screaming, and he came over and said, and that's when we met, and he was like, and after, you know, we would talk a little bit, and he was like, you're something else, and after the no bill of Tamir Rice, he actually messaged me on Facebook and was like, we got to do something, and that's when we did a little rally in 59 down for a little bit in Spring Valley, and then he looked at me, and he says, we should just do a chapter. Let's just do a chapter. And I said, I'm down with it. And part of being a chapter, though, and, you know, what we realize now is that you have to be vetted by the national, like when they call it the network. They don't call themselves a national, they call themselves a network. And we started the chapter, and then what happened is I have basically met all three of them, Alicia, Garza, Opal, and they never say their names right, Talamet, and Patrice Cullors.
They're the founders of the movement.
So I have met them kind of. So what you do is you kind of call them and then they vet you out and then they'll, you know, to see what are you doing for the community, and you should do that. You just can't be a Black Lives Matter chapter, blah. So we started our chapter. We hadn't been vetted yet, and I was able to reach out and I joined the operations squad for the network for the big overarching Black Lives Matter. And once I got on the operations squad, which is like the base that kind of holds up the network. I said, I'd like you to vet our chapter because we are doing work and we got vetted, so we are a legitimate chapter. You know, people go and say, I don't see you, but they're going to do a new website because they're gonna vet other chapters in September. So me and Weldon started the chapter. And I don't like to say it that way because I think that when we came together, there wasn't just us. It was Pastor Newton, it was Darnzella Milligan, it was Nikki Hines, it was Geraldine, cause it was a bunch of us, but me and him kind of said, let's chapter, and we got some core folks together, so it wasn't just us. But people say it was the two of us, which is fine, because we had the conversation, and I'm like, okay, I own it. But
I get it. Any organization that starts like that. Go ahead.
And the reason that Black Lives Matter is so different is that when people, I always try to tell people this about why, because people say, you know, there's no leadership in it. You know, we have to look at the leaders who've been assassinated. And in the Black Lives Matter movement, when you have a core network of people in these chapters, you can't assassinate 12 people. I mean, you could.
Exactly.
But that's why they try to say the leadership is like all of us, because you got to shoot all of us now. If I have 500 members, you got to shoot us all.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I understand that, because once you have an agenda and once you have protocol, and everybody, you know, kind of adheres to that.
Yes.
No matter where you are in the country, you can still represent Black Lives Matter because, you know, you're following the blueprint. You're doing things way it should be done. And like you said, you're vetted from, the national or, you know, the founding organization that put it all together. So I get it.
Yeah.
I get it totally. Yep. And kudos to you guys, man. I don't live in that area no more. I'm not a part of the Black Lives Matter movement, but I would love to be an integral part in any way I can. So we could probably talk about that, after the show.
Yeah, that's great.
Because I do support Black Lives Matter. I understand what it is. I understand why it's needed. And I also understand that the media wants to distort their purpose, their cause, and the reason. We want to bring attention, and that's the thing that really bothers me. A lot of times people don't see the behind-the-scenes foolishness and fuckery, excuse my language, that the media portrays on us. You know, we're so quick to see a tweet or something on Facebook or Twitter or, you know, a ticker on the TV screen, and you don't get the big picture about what's going on.
No.
So, that's why I was so happy to have you on here, particularly to explain, to the people who you are and what you do. I see a lot of people on social media who want to be socially conscious and talk about, you know, a Black pride and other things like that. You still there?
Yep.
They talk about Black pride and Black unity and things of that nature, but if you don't know the history, and if you are not working together with organizations and people who actually do this on a day-to-day basis, you're not in tune. You're not getting the information disseminated, you know, the way it should be. So I definitely wanted you to come on and talk about that. I'm still interested with you. But now, you know, what does the future hold for you? What do you got coming up? What do you got organizations, you know, whether it was BCS, with Pride, or Black Lives Matter? You know, what do you, you know, what do you got for the rest of the year? Because a lot's been going on. A lot of work still needs to be done.
Yeah.
So,
You know, we have for us, our area, we have some actions that we want. And, you know, we doing some actions. We have like, you know, and I want, you know, I wish people would understand this. You know, the Montgomery bus boycott was like 3 years long. So when we need to boycott and buy black, it isn't like a 21-day and a 7-day thing. It's a long-term commitment to buy black. And people like, you know, when we tell people to boycott, they'd be like, well, you know, I boycotted for 7 days. Okay. So we are asking people to really try to put our dollar. We spend $1.7 trillion a year in this country, black people. That's a lot of power. Money, you know what I'm saying? And if we took that buying power and used it the way we should, we would have so much economic power. We would have so much corporations sit up and go, whoa, we need to be listening to them people. But we willingly give our money to white people. We get our money to white people who don't care about us, who could give two boobs about us. So, and that's what I keep pulling. When I talk now, we put out the $1.7 trillion thing because people need to hear that money.
Well,
we spend a lot of money.
I understand why you're doing that. A lot of organizations and with in politics and business, every dollar is spent with a purpose. It's just not spent because you saw a sale, you saw a discount.
Yes.
People spend, and these organizations, I mean, these business people, and even these, you know, religious groups or ethnic groups, they spend with a purpose. So, you know, they understand that, you know, you know, Gargiulio's, you know, tailor is from the community. They've been around. If you're Italian, you're getting a soup tailor, go to him. Support, you know, Italian Americans in our community. The Jewish community does the same thing. I just saw a piece recently with a Jewish man or was talking about, you know, ethnic spending. You know, you spend in your community. You invest in your community.
Yes.
Whenever you're doing business and spend your money, you spend your money with a purpose because you spend it with somebody who looks like you and lives where you live. And that person will spend money with somebody who looks like him and lives where he lives. I saw a post, someone was asking me about black-owned businesses in Rockland County, Spring Valley. I'm saying that because that's where I grew up. There were tons of black-owned businesses. There were tons of black business people in Spring Valley. As poor as it was, there wasn't a lot of money in the community, but there was enough money to support the black businesses in the community.
That's right.
And when you see the demise of all of these black businesses across the nation, and we try to figure out what happened. And now when you look at black economics, black spending in the black community, and how black people support black business, you see what happened. It was a concerted effort to corrupt those businesses or bankrupt those businesses or buy those people out or move them out. And we had no plan, or there was no leadership. We didn't even understand what was happening. Now when you look back 10, 15 years later, you're saying, damn. You know, you're saying, damn, there's no black businesses.
Yeah.
And it's just not in our community. It's all over.
It's all over. So we've been real clear about that. So we, you know, there's a convening. I don't want to say convening because we know we're being surveilled, but there was a convening going on this weekend of all the chapters from Canada down are coming to meet, and we're all meeting to, I guess, you know, talk about the platform that they had, that they did. There's a platform that a lot of organizations signed on about, so about reparations and then black violence against black. So we're coming together to talk about that this week. So I'll be gone Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so we get together and talk and meet and do some black love and all that. So I'm excited about that, to be involved in the convening also. So.
Where is that going to be taking place at? And when is it again?
It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Right? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. In the South. But they figured the South was – I didn't think the South was a meeting place. I think they should have put it into Google and said, where's the meeting place for everybody? But It's in the South. I was like, okay, that ain't really the meeting place. That ain't really the middle, but they said it was the middle. Right? I was like, that ain't the middle, but yeah. So we're all excited about that.
And I'm glad that unity is there, and that everybody's rallying behind the Black Lives Matter movement, because you're speaking as one voice.
Yes.
Like I said, the media's been trying to discredit, you know, and politicians are trying to distance themselves. At the end of the day, you know, we're going to make our own voice be heard. We'll be able to speak to whoever it is we're trying to speak to. And in these rallies or you know, these meetings, it's just going to help that organization grow. And the main thing I like about it is the educational component that
yep.
they have. Because for a long time, people didn't know who Black Lives Matter was. They didn't know who the founders
right.
were. They didn't know what the voice message was.
Yeah.
They didn't know if they had a platform or a mission statement or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think
yeah.
the brother was on BET recently, and he gave a face to the movement. You know, for me, he did. Because I didn't even know who that brother was. And then I heard him speaking so eloquently, you know, I did my due diligence and found out, yeah, this is a real dude who does real work and is part of this movement. So,
oh, is that direct?
Yeah.
Yeah, he not.
Yeah.
Okay, so, okay. I give the brother props, but he when people say about Black, he never says that he didn't start it. Let's be real clear. And he does do Black Lives Matter, but he is not the founder. Like, let's be real quick.
No, I never said he was the founder.
Yeah. And his platform is not the platform of Black Lives Matter. What happens is he comes out of the Ferguson movement, and
sure.
they have a different platform. So I don't want to take away from him because he does good work, but I don't want to take away from his platform from Black Lives Matter is two different platforms. They did a platform separate from Black Lives Matter platform. Because Ferguson has a movement. It's called actually the Ferguson Movement. So they have a movement because
okay.
when Ferguson was under siege, Del Rey and Netta and them actually popped up like they were under siege. They lived there. I met them. So they actually have when if you say Black Lives Matter, they're cool because it is Black Lives Matter and they don't like put it
we
down or anything.
Same goal.
But they actually their platform is different than the Black Lives Matter platform. They do have a platform about police reform that's different than ours.
Okay, I stand corrected on that. But again, once it happened, it kind of gave a national audience to the struggle for a lot of people who didn't, you know, who dismissing the media, they're dismissing the police killings, they're just dismissing, you know, all the voices.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the brother kind of brought attention, you know, for a few minutes. You know, our attention span is not long. We don't stay consistent.
Yeah, yeah. I don't dislike him at all, but I always tell people don't get his platform because they actually have a plan of action that's different than BLM's plan of action. That's why I'm like, ooh, don't mix the two of them up. Yeah, there's two different platforms. Yeah.
Yeah. Two things, man. I just want to get your opinion on these. You don't have to really elaborate a lot. But the two events that have been in the news and very traumatic, you know, to the gay and lesbian community as well as Black people. One was the shooting in Orlando. How did you feel about that? And, you know, and what are you going to say to people who are confused about what happened and why?
You know, I struggle with the whitewashing of it. And, you know, those were brown and Black people who got killed. And I was struggling with the whitewashing of it. A lot of folks came out and they had the pride flag, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you don't care about some Black and brown people. On a regular, you was sending their asses out of the country. Oh, I said hey. But they were sending them out of the country. So I was so angry and about people like, you know, suddenly I saw all these pride flags go up, and them same people you were saying you kick them out of the country. So either you like us or you don't.
I saw that.
Really, I really
again
with the whitewashing of it. That's what bothered me is the whitewashing of it. It's like really
because the struggle is real. The struggle is real. They were targeted for who they are, not for where they were, what they were doing. It was a particularly attack on lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people.
Yes.
And for those who don't see that for what it is, again, you're being misled and hoodwinked. It's not about gun violence. It's not about gun reform, that is something totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people and politicians were gun reform, and I was like, do you know that was they were talking to a population of folks. It wasn't about, and they would do that rather than say, you know, this they target a community of folks. They started getting on stages and talking about gun reform. I'm like, so you don't want to talk about the LGBT community? I get you. So I was so conflicted with folks about this that I was crazy. It made me crazy, Jeff. I was like going crazy over it. Like,
yeah, no. Listen, at the end of the day, man, your opinion just needs to be heard. You know,
yep.
And social media is just so full of meaningless suggestions and ideas and statements that I can't give credence to any of them. You know, that's why, again, you know, the radio show, man. Once again, full soon, American Black Star Radio Show with Vanessa Green, Black Lives Matter, VC Pride Movement, out of Rockland and Orange County in New York. One last thing before we go, it's probably going to shut me down in a minute. The police killings in Dallas and the subsequent one, I think it was in Minnesota or someplace, created a really, really hostile environment from police officers as they tried to tie the Black Lives Matter in with that horrible killing of police officers. What was your take on that and the way the media spent it?
Oh, you're on Dallas?
Yeah. I'm talking about Dallas.
Oh, you're talking about...
Police shooting in Dallas, and it was another was a police shooting in Dallas, and another one somewhere else.
It was tragic. You know, here's this is what we try to stay above that because, and this is where Blue Lives Matter makes me crazy because here's the deal because they always liken it to Black Lives Matter cause. We don't cause.
That's what I'm going to make the spin they put on it.
We don't cause it. You know, even with Dallas, actually a black cop was real instrumental in forming that rally, and you know, news didn't tell you that piece. They left that little piece out. So we always take the high road that, you know, we don't want to lose focus of the brutality that happens in our community at the hands of police. So we were like, it's not like we condone any of that, you know, which shocks me. And, you know, I get whatever police do is that none of these men stay alive to tell their story. I would like, you know, we always say, can they stay alive to at least tell a side of the story?
Oh no, we tell you that murder was murder. I get it.
White men in this country shoot cops too, and they live to tell the story and their dialogue and why they did it.
Oh man, we see them paraded. We see them called mentally ill, mentally unstable. You know, the guy that did the church shooting, the other guys that does these shootings at the schools and all the other places, they always have an excuse and an understanding. It's never against a group of people. It's an individual who's deranged.
Yes.
But again, you know, they try to say we have, you know, an inherent dislike and ill will. And I don't think that's true.
And that's what made me mad about the Dallas one, because there was a black cop who was, I believe, even killed in it, who actually was instrumental in getting that rally in Dallas moving. But the news didn't tell that.
But I saw some of the cops. Yeah. Well, at that time, you know, police officers were just trying to find a scapegoat.
Yeah.
And you know, and the BLM movement is an easy target anytime something happens.
Yeah.
Anytime something
happens.
Vanessa, listen, thank you so much. It's been great. You know, I have to talk about these events and things that go on, and particularly all the work that you're doing in New York for a long time. But it's only a 30-minute show. Before you go, what would you like to say to people out there who are mad and upset, people of color who want to do something and be a part of change and help facilitate change in the black community? What would you like to say to some of those people that are listening out there?
You know, I think people think that they can't join a chapter or be a part of it. Even if you think you can't, you can contribute in some way. Everybody, and I know this country has told us that we don't have a value and have a purpose and have a talent. And a lot of the chapters struggle with, so reach out to one of your local chapters and see if they need you to do. People got talent in computers. People got talent in all kinds of stuff. Reach out. Yeah. See what they need. If you know some people you could even draw a poster. Posters, we always need posters. Reach out to your local chapters and ask what. You don't have to be the person to get arrested. You don't have to be the person to even go to a rally, but you could be the person to do phone calls to folks to say we're having a rally. You know, reach out. We all got talent, and this country told us that we're not valuable and we're not human. We are, and we have talent, and we can change this country to view us as citizens that we are.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that message. And well, Vanessa, it's been wonderful. Listen, you got to promise to come back on the show. We're going to have McWeldon coming on. I got some other people that will be coming on from the New York area, you know, just to give them an opportunity and a platform to speak about who they are, what they do, and how they facilitate change in the black community. So, you know, I love you. Keep in touch.
Yes, love you.
Going to be in New York soon. Hopefully I get a chance to see you.
Awesome. And I'm going to send you those dates when I'm doing racing so you can blast it out for us, too.
Absolutely. Send me anything you got, whatever you need. You know I'm here to help.
I know you do. Thanks, Jeff. Bye.
All right. It's been Vanessa Green of the Rockland Orange County chapter of the Black Lives Movement, as well as BCS Pride. We're supporting lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in New York. Follow her on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Vanessa, I love you. Have a wonderful week.
Love
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Playback.